We at the Pet Collective Podcast are not medical professionals. We do offer advice, but please always consult your veterinarian before making any medical decisions.
This week, we discuss correcting undesirable behavior in cats and dogs and how to help ease your pet's mind.
If you don't like humans, that's understandable. I'd rather spend time with my furry animal. It's the Pet Collective, yeah.
Hello, I'm Allison Seeky.
And I'm Kyle Kittleson. Welcome to the Pet Collective Podcast, the podcast for parents who are pet obsessed. And one of my favorite pet obsessed parents is right here, Allison. Thanks for coming on and talking about all of these great topics we have lined up.
Oh, yeah. Well, today is my specialty. We are talking about bad behavior.
Ooh.
So what questions do you have for me, Kyle? I am horribly behaved.
Were you born bad, or did something cause you to be bad?
Let's just say everything changed when I became a cheerleader.
Wow. Were you a cheerleader for real?
I was in middle school, yeah.
God, that was my dream to be a cheerleader, but I also love not getting beat up, so I didn't do it.
And for you young listeners
out there, they're like, well, why didn't you just do it? It was different back then, okay?
Guys just couldn't be a cheerleader.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we had a couple, but yeah.
Wow. Well, you were more progressive than my school.
No, they had to sustain a lot of bullying. People were rude about it.
Oh, okay.
Don't worry. They were just braver than me.
Yeah. I also was like such a, I'm just like a skinny, puny guy anyway. So I'm not going to be able to lift up any girls or guys or anyone, you know? I could just yell and clap and dance.
I was gonna be like, hey, I'm really tired of guys thinking that people don't like skinny, like that men aren't supposed to be skinny or something. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. But if your point is that you can't lift people up, that's a totally different thing. I can't do the sport. Are you a sporty at all? Any sports?
No. I mean, I swam for 9 years, but like,
That's great cardio.
I'm in my own lane. No one can bother me.
Right. Yeah. Definitely not a contact sport. No. Oh, gosh. Did you watch Cheer on Netflix?
Of course.
Oh, it's so good.
I cried. Okay. At the finale, I screamed. Spoiler. Okay. Ready? Spoiler.
Uh-oh.
Turn down your podcast. When the guy screws up at the very end.
Yeah.
And he hurts himself. Yeah. I literally got up on my chair. I go, what are you doing? This is nationals. Like, get it together.
The pressure is on. Yeah. We didn't train to get second place.
No. I was really upset with him. But a very great show. Everyone should watch it. Okay, well, so I know everyone tuned in to hear about what television we watched and what we did in middle school, but other people tuned in to hear on how they can correct bad behaviors with their pets at home. So let's go into our first segment, which is correcting bad behaviors. I like starting with the fact that we have labeled the behaviors as bad, but I prefer the term undesirable because in the animal's world, there's nothing wrong with peeing in the corner of the house. There's nothing wrong with scratching up your couch. There's nothing wrong with barking at the mailman. These are just certainly undesirable.
Yeah.
For the people, it's undesirable. So when we talk about bad behaviors, we're really talking about people who find the behaviors undesirable. And once that is kind of clear in our brain, it's much easier to address because we can look at why they're behaving this way. Not why they're behaving bad, okay? There are no bad dogs, no bad pets out there. It's just why they are behaving the way they do. So, I mean, you've had Peaches for, how long have you had Peaches again, your dog?
I've had her since she was 6 weeks, so 7.5 years.
Okay, so a long time. So what are some of the undesirable behaviors that she used to have that she doesn't have anymore?
For the first 2 years that I had Peaches, she ate her own feces. I didn't know how else to put it. There's no delicate way to say it.
No,
and
it's
very common for puppies.
Yeah.
I believe it's because they're searching for extra nutrients. But normally it doesn't stick around that long. It really stuck with her. It took a while. It took a while to reprogram that one.
How did it go? How did Peaches stop? Why did she stop?
She didn't want to stop on her own volition. So I used to... She used to have a backup, like a bathroom patio, if you will. Mm-hmm. So like half the time she was going to the bathroom, it was just letting her out onto the patio. So and that was when it was happening. And so I was just careful to immediately remove her from that environment once she had gone number two.
Yeah. I mean, that would be my suggestion is if you... remove the ability for your dog to eat its own poop, then eventually it should naturally phase out. I have worked with some dogs though, man, they hunt for it. You take them to a dog park and they are hunting, not even for theirs, just anybody's. And it's
really
disgusting and gross. Yeah. And it grosses me out. Like
that's super nasty.
I've had sea lion poop, dolphin poop, parrot poop, snake poop under my fingernails, in my ear. Like I've been covered
Kyle,
in animal poop.
No.
I'm just telling you, this is my history, okay? But sometimes it does take a toll. So yes, removing it is really great. Making sure they're getting a proper diet is really great. But you also can, now this might be a little controversial, what I'm about to say, but I think it's completely fine. If you take, I'm blanking on, what's that really spicy pepper? Anyway, take some crushed red pepper. Cayenne pepper. Thank you. Yeah.
Isn't cayenne pepper really spicy?
Well, I think dogs don't really like it. So if you take like a crushed pepper, a cayenne pepper, and sprinkle it on the poop.
Pepper poo.
pepper, if you do some pepper poop, they typically will go, ooh, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
Like they don't like it seasoned or flavored. So that can deter them from going in that direction. But the reason I asked you that question wasn't just to have an aside about dogs eating their own poop. It was more to illustrate the fact that a lot of behavioral problems, as we put them, will naturally go away over time. You know, if you have a puppy that's teething, that's probably going to work itself out. If you have a dog that you just brought home who's anxious, you know, and it's been living in a pound for 3 years, sometimes that anxiety will just naturally go away. So I want pet parents to take a little bit of a deep breath and realize that a lot of these undesirable behaviors in the early days of parenthood can figure themselves out. So after those get figured out, though, there are some problem behaviors or undesirable behaviors that are really common that come up that will need to be addressed and trained.
There's something that Peaches does that I'm wondering if I should be concerned about, you know, while we're talking about the nature of quote unquote bad behavior, you know, like this isn't, I don't know who it's harming, right? It's not harming anyone except my idea that she shouldn't be doing this. Okay, let me just talk about it so that we know what I'm talking about here.
Okay.
Peaches has this really cute thing that everybody calls like her circus trick, okay? And it's when she hops onto her hind legs, so she's standing upright, and she starts begging with her front legs. She won't, number one, she won't do it on command. So this is only something she has to feel so inclined to do. But when she does it, everybody encourages it and reinforces it. Oh, look how cute, you know, and they shower her with affection. And she knows that people love that. She knows that that's going to get her some treats. But being her mother, I know that she's begging and that I'm wishing people wouldn't reinforce that habit. But like it's her trademark move now. So I'm just like, I don't know what to do about that. Is that eventually going to hurt her hind legs? Like, is she going to have worse arthritis down the road because of it? Like, is there something
to
worry
like
about
this
there?
I feel like this is an Allison problem, not a Peaches problem. All I hear is a dog who's a gaff plate. Look, who cares? If you care, if you're like, God, it really drives me up a wall when she goes on her hind legs and begs, then
no,
we can address it and we can train it. Then let her do it.
Okay, so we don't care that it's disobedient and that she's begging.
Well, we're creating those terms, disobedient. Disobedient to what? If in her world, she's being incredibly obedient. She sees another person. She goes, I want attention. I know when I do this, I get it. And the person delivers every single time. So in her world, there's no line of disobedience or obedience. There's just her environment that she's interacting with. And this is the most reinforcing way she has found to interact with her environment. But if you were, let's say Peaches wasn't this tiny dog and Peaches was a St. Bernard. And the St. Bernard gone in his hind legs and knocked down an elderly woman. That would be a problem. So we would have to address it. So what we would just change is, what does the environment do in order or when Peaches, when this St. Bernard does this cute thing on its hind legs? In a training session, we would want to train the St. Bernard to learn that when you jump up, you lose all attention. But we would practice it in a training session. We wouldn't do it on a walk with a stranger. You would literally have a friend come over to your house and you'd say, hey, when you come in, Max is going to jump on you. And when he does, I just need you to not touch him, not talk to him, and not look at him. Okay? Mm-hmm. I know it's going to be hard, but he's a big dog, so he's going to do it a lot, but just ignore it. As soon as Max is sitting down and he's calm, that's when I want you to do all three of those things. I want you to look at him. I want you to talk to him. I want you to touch him. And I want you to go get a treat and give it to him. So Max would learn, okay, I thought it was jumping up that gets me the attention, but actually it's sitting down. And you'll see dogs who get trained in these training sessions experiment with that out in the quote real world. So if you take them to a farmer's market and they see somebody and somebody approaches them and goes, oh, who is that good boy over there? Da, 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 da. You'll see dogs who have been trained go, ooh, this is my cue. This is my cue to sit down and be calm because that's how I'm going to get attention. And so we're just changing how they interact with the environment. If Peaches loved being on her hind legs, if just the act of being on the hind legs was something she found reinforcing, she would just walk in the room on her hind legs. She'd just be like, hello, I'm here. But she doesn't do that. She only does it when she thinks she can solicit something from her environment. So all we're training the animal to do is change the way you're soliciting the attention. That way doesn't get you anything, but this way gets you everything. And that thought process right there, if you just remember that, you will be able to solve 80% of your undesirable behaviors with your pet, okay? Here is the basics of all animal behavior, all animal conditioning, all training, all everything. It comes down to this right here. If you see behavior you like, draw attention to it. If you see behavior you don't like, ignore it. Now we have to define what ignoring and drawing attention means. Drawing attention is those three things: looking at your dog, touching your dog, talking to your dog. Ignoring it is not doing those three things. Ignoring it is not saying, I don't like it when you jump on me. No, get down. I don't like that. That's not ignoring it. Mm-hmm. You're talking, you're touching, you're looking at your dog, you're reinforcing your dog for doing that thing. You have to actually ignore that behavior. And most behavioral problems can be adjusted that way. But also watch your ratio. I know I'm going on a tangent here, but this is good stuff. Watch your ratio. If your whole method of adjusting and conditioning behavior, of shaping that behavior, is by ignoring bad behavior, you're only going to see less bad behavior. What you want, though, is to see more good behavior. And the only way you see more of that is by reinforcing, rewarding, drawing attention to that good behavior. The reason dogs jump and bark is because that's when they get attention. Mm-hmm. They go, hey, stop it. Get down. Quit. That's when they get pushed off. The reason you don't see your dog laying down and being cute, calm, and cool and collected is because you ignore your dog when they're like that. When your dog is cool and collected and not causing a ruckus, you completely ignore your dog. So your dog learns, well, this never gets me anything.
Yeah.
So what is your dog going to do? It's going to do the things that get him attention. So if people just understood that, man, please, we could get rid of half the dog trainers in America because people would just have great great acting pets.
Yeah. And I love that you make the distinction between doing this in a like a training session or in an intentional environment as opposed to out there in the world with strangers, because that can feel so elusive. You know, we can't control how our neighbors handle our dogs or other pets.
And in fact, I had a client who had a weird relationship with his uncle. Okay. And he like did not like his uncle, and the uncle loved coming over and playing with my client's dog. But the guy's like, I hate this guy. And I was like, well, you need to talk to your uncle and talk to him about how to interact with your dog and how to behave. He goes, he won't listen to me. He won't do that. And I go, what's your uncle doing? And he said, well, when he comes over, he encourages this dog. I think it was like it was a big dog. I forget, like a Weimaraner, I think. And he was like, he encourages this dog to jump on him because he likes it. But I don't want my dog jumping on people. And I go, well, what does he do to encourage it? He says, well, he pats up on his chest. Like he takes his hands and pats his chest as like a signal to come up and jump on him.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, well, let's train your dog to take that signal to mean sit.
Totally.
Because that's just a human construct of jump up here so I pat my chest.
Yeah.
So we did that. We looked. We said we'd pat our chest, and what'd the dog do? Jumped up on us, because that's what the dog has learned to do. Mm-hmm. And then we ignored the dog. So we're saying, hey, let's say the dog's name was Max again. We go, hey, Max. And we pat our chest. He jumps up. The dog gets ignored. Finally, the dog gets back to all fours. And we do it again. Hey, Max. Dog jumps up. We ignore the dog. Dog goes down to all fours. Mm-hmm. The third time we say, hey, Max. And Max doesn't jump up because he hasn't gotten anything the last two times. Right when he didn't jump up, we said, good boy. And he got a treat.
Yes.
So he learns really quick. All right. When people come do this, that means I've got to sit down.
Yeah.
And so now we're not dealing with the uncle. The uncle can come in and pat his chest all he wants. What the dog's going to do is sit down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a nice way to illustrate the power of having a good intentional communication with your pet and focusing on what you can control rather than what you can't.
Yeah, I love that. And using positive reinforcement, because that's what we all want, right? A pat on the back for the good stuff we do.
So we live in this punishment-based society, but animals don't respond to that as well as they do with positive reinforcement. So you'll see a lot of people rely on things like shaking a can of pennies for a cat who's doing something they don't like, or squirting a dog in the face with a water bottle because they're barking. And while these can be effective to stop the undesirable behavior in the moment, they do not create a loving, trusting relationship with your pet. And perhaps even more importantly, it does not tell the pet what it should be doing.
Totally. Yeah. It's just shaming them for being
themselves.
For what
they are doing.
Yeah.
Exactly. It'd be like, I mean, you're an actor, Allison. So if you went in to go do a scene and you did your scene and they were like, no, oh my God, no, that was so bad, Allison. Terrible. Oh, I hated that.
Yeah.
Okay, do it again.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what? Yeah, I need some direction here. And so we've got to give our pets that same type of direction.
I love that. I was thinking of it more as like, you know, if we live in a punishment-based society, the least we can do is change that narrative for our dogs. So just because we have to
exactly.
endure that doesn't mean we have to pass that along to them. That's like one of the least awesome things about society. So, yeah.
Exactly. And I kind of use the 80-20 principle here too. You know, it's a solid principle, but 80% of the time you should be telling your pet at home, good job. 80% of their day should be like, you nailed it. That was great. And it can be the little things, guys. Did your dog look at you before? Did your dog give you eye contact on a walk? Tell them that was great. Did your dog come lay down quietly next to you when you sat down on the couch? Aww. Tell them that was a good idea. It's just checking in with them and letting them know, I love that. I love that. I love that. I love that. And 80% of their whole life should be, you're doing great. You're doing great. That's how you build trust in a relationship. And that's how you'll see a really great behavior. Now, I'm not sure how, you know, we're recording this podcast and we haven't gotten any feedback from our viewers yet. but I'm not sure how deep they like to go into the training mm-hmm. portion of everything. But when we talk about positive reinforcement, it's one of four, reinforcement or punishment methods you can use with your pets. But I'm thinking they might have a better understanding of positive reinforcement if they learn what the other three are as well.
Oh, so you're saying that positive reinforcement is one?
Is one of four options.
Right.
Yeah. So you have positive reinforcement, which is when I add something to the environment to encourage more of that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So your dog doesn't bark at the skateboarder, so I give him a treat for not barking. I ask my dog to sit. He sits. They get a treat.
Yeah.
The treat is the positive reinforcer, okay?
Totally.
We also have negative reinforcement, which sounds really bad. That sounds like, ooh, that's the one you don't want
mm-hmm.
because it has the word negative in it. But because it says reinforcement, it's good. Negative just means we're removing something from the environment. So, for example, Callie is afraid of balloons. She does not like them. So if sometimes we'll walk into a party or in the grocery store or something and there'll be balloons there and she'll be really timid. But if I ask her to sit and she does, I will reinforce her by removing the balloons. So I'm negatively reinforce her by removing the balloons from the environment because she had such a great reaction to them. She didn't bark. She didn't go nuts. She was just like, well, what is that? And she looked at me and I was like, hey, just sit down. And she did. And now she's trusting me with this weird thing in front of her, the balloon. And I don't just reinforce her by saying, good, here's a treat. I reinforce her by getting rid of the balloons. So she's like, oh my gosh, every time I talk to dad, he takes care of everything.
So negative
reinforcement,
yeah.
When you hear that in the media, that just means we're removing something from the environment.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the negative comes
from. It's a subtraction. Then, it's not like a downer.
Yes. Right. Where the downer is the use of punishment.
Yeah.
So if you hear someone say positive punishment or negative punishment, that's when you need to go, ooh. I'm not in.
Yeah, okay, what's goodbye. Positive punishment? Or do we even want to go there?
Well, I mean, I think it's good to know just because it illustrates it so nicely. But positive punishment would be like yelling no at your dog or taking a newspaper and, you know, hitting them on the snout. That'd be positive punishment. So you ask your dog to sit. They don't sit. And you say no. And so you're punishing them for not doing that thing.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're not doing that. Are you kidding? Stop. If you're yelling no at your dog or I don't even want to think about people hitting their pets, but like no positive punishment, okay?
So I know that cats, you know, work a little different than dogs. And so the best way to correct behaviors in our cats is actually to have your environment do it for you, right? So a lot of cats don't like sticky stuff or things that make crinkly noises like foil. So if there's a spot in your house that your cat keeps going to that you really want them to leave alone, it's like just put down a piece of duct tape for them to walk on or a piece of foil and they will learn that that area is unpleasant for them, right?
Yeah, and That's correct and that's accurate, but I just want to be careful here with people, again, focusing on what they don't want their cat to do. Because when you focus, okay, I don't want my cat to go scratch my couch anymore, so I'm going to put up some tin foil to make the couch less attractive.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. So what do you want your cat to do then?
Mm.
Tell me that.
Mm-hmm.
I get you don't want them to scratch. Well, where can they scratch? They've got to scratch somewhere. So it's more important that you have a scratching post and you reward and reinforce them when they use it. That is much more important than setting up some stickiness on a countertop that you don't want your cat to walk on. Focus on what you do want them to do and reward that.
Well, I'm glad we talked about it because even though you keep saying that, I just keep thinking the wrong things are the right things to do. So it's good to talk about it.
This is our natural. This is what we do as humans. I mean, I see this with when parents parent their human children. They're like, well, he's not doing this, and he always says this, and he doesn't da 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 da. And I go, I haven't heard one thing that you want him to do, though.
Right.
The focus is never on the desire. It's on the thing that we don't like, and that innately causes issues. Especially with cats, because a lot of cats, you might not see them for a day and a half. Like, they might just be out and about. You might have an indoor-outdoor cat that has a whole different life outside that you're just completely unaware of. So one thing you can do to just tighten the type of desirable behavior that you're looking for is have some sort of routine with your cat. Put your cat on a feeding schedule. Have them know that they're going to get fed in the morning and in the evening in this location in the house. Maybe there's always a playtime before or after the meal. This type of routine not only allows you to build some trust with your cat, but it also gives them a place to be, a time to be at, for you to have those types of interactions and work on any desirable behaviors you're trying to get them to do.
Totally.
It goes back to the 80-20 principle. I love the idea of indicating to your cat that this place is not a reinforcing area. That's fine. It just can't be the only method we're using to communicate with our animals. It can only be one. So just like going back to if you were acting in a scene, they'd say, hey, you know, we don't like this and this and this, but here's what we do like.
Yeah.
When you give both, that is when animals tend to see the most the biggest amount of improvement.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, whether it's a cat or a dog, it's like if there's one area where they just like keep peeing or whatever it is, right. It's like redefine right. What that is to them. You know, make that the new, I mean, clean that spot very well, but then start...
Yes.
Putting their toys there and make that like the spot they play in instead.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you should one reason that dogs get afraid to go in a car is because the only time they go into a car is when they're headed to the vet.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
So they start to associate vet with the car.
Yeah.
And so you want to be cognizant of how your animal may be interpreting all of the different types of stimulus it has in its environment.
Right.
And just focus again on if I like it, reward it. If I see my dog doing something I like, reward it. If I see my cat doing something I like, really reward it. And cats may be a little pickier than dogs for the most part, but cat parents, tell me if I'm off the mark here. Don't cats really have stuff they really love?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like cats are like, I only eat this, or I'm a big fan of this. And they have this thing that they really love. That's really great for us. We can use that thing that they really love to reward behavior that we really love. So everybody wins.
Yeah. Cats love to be on high up things. They like to be perched. Mm-hmm. And if there's something that you don't want them to be perched on, well, then get them something else to perch on that they like even more. Problem solved.
That's great advice. In fact, there was a story a long, long time I heard years ago about a company who was hired to consult for this cheetah habitat at a zoo. And the cheetah had this amazing habitat, tons of enrichment, great diet, very healthy, but it had it was pacing in the enclosure, which is a sign that the animals are bored, not stimulated. It's not good.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't figure out what was going on. They gave this cat everything it could ever possibly want, and it was still
something
pacing
else.
Back and forth.
Okay.
They brought in the consultant. The consultant goes, you do not have a place for this cheetah to gaze
oh.
out into the open. It can't look out over anything. So they built this massive platform very high up where the cheetah could crawl to the top, see the entire park, the parking lot, the city, everything. And it immediately changed all of this type of behavior because the animal was missing something that it naturally
yeah,
wanted
fundamental
to experience.
Need. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so sometimes no amount of training is going to get rid of an undesirable behavior like the pacing unless you're meeting just their basic needs.
Getting to
so
that root cause.
Yes. And this can be, you can find these basic needs with cats. get educated on the specific breed that you're working with. Get educated, maybe if it's possible, with their family line. Take a few weeks and really watch their behavior. Do they enjoy basking in the sun? Do they tend to spend time in one room over the other? Why is that? Mm-hmm. Is there a time when they seem really timid? What's making them timid? Be aware of their environment and make those adjustments to give them a more comfortable life.
Should we take some questions from our pet collective audience?
Questions.
Me too.
Yes.
Here's one from Savannah on Instagram. She wants to know, her cat isn't eating while she's away and a pet sitter is feeding her. How can she fix that?
So, if it's been one or two days, we're good. Okay. This happens a lot. Even with dogs, this happens. Most animals will eat when they get hungry enough. They might just be a little nervous. I would recommend that the pet sitter gives your cat some space. So provide the food for the cat, and then maybe the pet sitter can go run some errands or, you know, take a walk or something. See if the cat eats anything when she gets back. And again, this is so we don't know how this cat is. The cat may prefer that somebody's there while she eats. I have no idea. The cat may be open to getting hand fed. What I wouldn't do, though, is do not be giving the cat any treats if the cat is not eating their diet. So first, we need to get
That's
the cat
important.
Eating their diet before any treats. Yeah, so don't be like, oh, well, she's not eating her food, so I'm giving her these
Gotta
treats,
give her
so
something.
She's at least getting something.
Yeah.
No, mistake.
Can't.
It's get her the good stuff first. But yeah, I would start by giving her space, try hand feeding, and if it's only been a day or two, don't worry about it. The cat's going to eat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's another one. This one's from Taylor on Instagram. They want to know how they get their dog to stop pulling on the leash.
Oh.
I want to know that one, too.
So frustrating. Well, there's...
We're working on it, but yeah, I don't know if it's the way to go about it. So please tell me how I should be going about it.
Well, it's quite the spectrum. You have some dogs who will pull so hard that they will choke themselves, and you have other dogs who just pull a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, however, we're going to start leash training inside the home. So we're going to choose a reinforcer that they only get when you work with them on a leash, okay? So you're not going to use their normal treats. You're going to find some cheese or some meat, and you're only going to get out that cheese and meat when you're doing a leash training session. And we're going to start inside the house. You're going to use a standard length leash, not a retractable leash, and you're going to choose which side you would like your dog to walk on. There's no right or wrong side here. I use the left. You can use either side. Once you've established all that and you have your treats and your leash and you're inside your house, all you're looking for is for your dog to be on the correct side and giving you eye contact. The most important thing when you're training your dog to not pull on their leash is to train your dog to look at you. That is the key.
Mm.
So reward eye contact when your dog is on that leash. Now, I want you to videotape yourself, Taylor, doing an inside the house leash training session. And what you're going to see when you watch that video, and maybe not you, but a lot of people do this, watch how you're holding the leash. Most people wrap that leash around their hand three or four times and they hold their leash up by their chest. And so, of course, the dog is pulling on the leash. You've given them no other option. Just because your dog pulls on the leash does not mean you pull on the leash. You hold the leash, okay? You drop your hand down, and if your dog wants to pull, that's on them, but do not pull on your dog's leash. Remember, too, everyone, that your leash is not a training tool. It is a safety device. So do not use it to jerk back your dog on their neck. Don't use it to pull them around. It is simply to stop your dog from running away or running into the street. So start with these in-house training sessions. Focus on a loose leash. Focus on you being calm with your hand relaxed down to your side with a high-value reward, just reinforcing that eye contact. Once you get consistency with that eye contact, then you can start walking around that house. As long as your dog stays on that one side, gives you eye contact, and doesn't pull on the leash, they can get reinforced. If they ever do pull on the leash inside the house, Taylor, you listen to the podcast, what do? We're going to do nothing. We're going to do no talking, no touching, no talking. We ignore the pulling. Once they've stopped pulling on the leash, maybe they look back at you. You're going to say, good. You can lure them with that cheese or that meat back into where you want them to be on your left-hand side. Once you get that eye contact again, start your walk. Once you take a few steps and they don't pull on the leash, that's when you reinforce them for not pulling on the leash, for walking nicely beside you. Leash training takes a lot of work. It is pretty time sensitive, but if you do it inside the house exactly like I told you to do and you're consistent, in 7 and 10 days, 5 to 10 minutes twice a day, you're going to have a dog that doesn't pull on the leash.
All right, I think we have time for one more question today. This one comes from YouTube. Clara wants to know, she says, my 9-year-old border collie is driving me crazy. I don't know how to make him stop eating everything you can imagine. Socks, t-shirts, garbage, paper, etc. Please help.
Clara, let me clarify this for you.
Oh, I see what you did there.
So, A, why does your dog have access to socks, t-shirt, jeans, garbage, and paper? Let's clean up, okay? The first thing you can do is remove the ability for your dog to eat all of this stuff. It is the easiest thing to do, and it's the most effective. If your dog cannot reach any socks, t-shirt, jeans, garbage, and paper, then your dog will not eat those things. Okay?
Very good point.
Two, you have a border collie, and I am not typically a breedist, but I'm being a little bit of a breedist right now. This dog needs so much mental stimulation and enrichment and so much exercise you can't even imagine. Whatever you think you're doing, you need to do more of it. I know you're like, well, I walk them 3 times a day and I train them all the time and I take them to agility classes. Double it. This dog needs so much more you can't even begin to imagine it. So I'm guessing that because this dog is just trying to find any type of stimulation enrichment and going after all your clothes and the garbage and paper, it's because it's lacking somewhere else. So really focus on challenging your dog mentally. Train something that is difficult for them to do. Don't just train a sitting down. Train them to fetch a beer from a fridge. You can do that. Train them to do some stupid pet tricks. I don't even care if it's training that helps you have a better life with your dog. It just gets them thinking more. That is probably going to decrease a lot of this behavior. Now, Callie, my dog, she hunts. She is a panty hunter. If she's underwear, panty, oh my God. Anytime someone comes and visits, I go, you got to keep your stuff locked up. And they go, yeah. And I go, no. Not just like in your suitcase closed, like zip up your suitcase, because she is on the prowl from underwear, and she swallows them whole.
Oh my God.
And she's probably done it 15 times. I've retrieved at least 15 full pairs, no rips, of women's underwear from vomit in Callie's life.
That is
and
impressive.
It's 'cause she just loves eating them whole. And, so could I train it? Could I go through the rigmarole of like training it? Sure. But what I ended up just doing is I just don't allow her access to that anymore.
Cut off the supply.
There is just no access. Cut off the supply of panties. Exactly. That's the quickest.
Oh, see, that's what I did too. Peach has never eaten a full pair of panties, but she did used to eat specifically the crotch out of specifically dirty panties.
Oh.
And it was nasty. Really annoying because I would like forget. I would put them through the wash and everything. And then I'd go to put my panties on and they were all crotchless.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, you're staying with the trend.
So I just, except for when I need a new pair of crotchless panties, I've just been sure not to leave my panties on the floor when I take a shower ever again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just what it is. And people will go, oh, well, that's so much extra work. And I have 3 kids. How am I going to keep my kids from picking up all the clothes? My response is, you're also a pet parent now. Okay, so if you got three kids and your dog is eating 15 socks a week, I'm telling you the easiest thing to do is to remove the socks from the dog's access.
What's more work? Removing the socks from where they can eat them or cleaning up their puke full of socks?
Yes, and look, you're lucky if they puke it up, because that is a serious medical problem if that big piece of underwear or sock gets jumbled around in their intestines. Yeah,
yeah, so, that can be fatal. That's like an actual serious thing. So,
absolutely. But great questions all around.
Oh, yeah, these were really great questions. I have a question.
I have a question. I don't know if you guys know this about me, but back in the 80s, I used to have this. I was in high school at the time. And I know my skin looks great. I used to have this friend who was a kooky old scientist. I called him Doc. And sure, I was in high school and it was kind of weird to have this old scientist as a friend, but there's no need to explain that. It's not important. The important thing is that he invented a time machine. It was insane.
No way.
Yeah, way. And we accidentally traveled back to 1955. I don't know if you guys know anything about time travel, but boy, things get complicated fast.
Yeah.
I encountered young versions of my own parents, and I had to make sure that they fall in love just so that I would exist in the future. I know, it was crazy. Wow. I almost had to flirt with my mom. It was super weird. Anyways, I know what you're thinking. Anosh, isn't that just the plot to Back to the Future? Did that really happen to you?
Right.
It did happen to me. It's not Back to the Future. It's different, and here's why. While I was traveling back in time, I encountered my own baby self. I saw myself as a baby. And we used to have this family cat, right? And I was crawling towards this really steep staircase when my parents weren't looking. They were looking in the other direction. And I was going to fall down this staircase. And the cat jumped in front of me and saved me from falling down.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, how did that cat recognize that I was just a vulnerable little baby about to hurt myself?
Yeah.
Do cats and dogs know what babies are and when they're vulnerable? And how come they're not attacking them like they would attack another little thing?
Again, your life is so interesting, Anosh.
Please, I mean, write a book.
Stories. These are just my stories.
A lot has happened in the 80s and 90s with you.
It was a couple big decades for me. Yeah, it's been the last 20 years have been pretty boring, but the 80s and 90s were wild.
Yeah. Okay, so my personal opinion is absolutely. I think there is a very special bond between pets and babies, human babies. And I think a lot of that's instinctual because we've domesticated these animals over so many years. I think oftentimes they can bond with a human in ways that a wild, undomesticated animal cannot. And so, sure, I think they have the ability at least to see, ooh, something might, you know, be endangering this baby that I care about. Now, does that mean every single thing that your pet does, they're like, I got to take care of it. I got to make, no, that's ridiculous. And I'm certain that there are a lot of coincidences out there. But for the pet parents out there, don't you just know when your animal knows? Like, when I met my nephew when he was first born, my dog knew. Callie knew that was important. She had met babies before, but she was particularly worried. I'm being very anthropomorphic, worried about this baby. I mean, she would whine if the baby was whining. If the baby had a dirty diaper, she wouldn't leave its side. I mean, she was just very, and we could probably explain these things from a science basis, but that's not fun. And that's not how I like to think my dog is. So I like to think that animals do have that bond and they are aware.
Well, that's cool. I mean, thank God that cat was there. I wouldn't be here.
Seriously.
You know?
Seriously.
It was crazy.
I mean, it's... Yeah. Yeah, I'm... if I could have done that, in the 80s, I was doing way different stuff. But, like, if I could have gone with you, I would have done something else, I feel like.
What, then just not fall down the stairs?
Yeah, like, I would have been, like... Like, I'd buy some stock in Apple or like.
You wouldn't have saved me? Oh no, I'm disappearing! I'm disappearing!
Well, we don't have a producer anymore, so I guess that's the end of the season?
Yeah.
Too bad, because I would love to keep doing this.
It was good while it lasted, but, you know.
Indeed.
Who hasn't lost a producer to a time-traveling epidemic? You know, it happens. It's happened to me more times than I can count. But Allison, did you know that this is actually, like, the end of season one of the Pet Collective podcast?
Why do you have to say it like that? You're breaking my heart. Well, I'm not good at goodbyes.
I'm not saying it's a goodbye. It's just like season one, done. Well, we would love to know your favorite episodes or your favorite moments from season one. Make sure you tweet out at the Pet Collective. While you're there, you can also follow them on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and TikTok. You can also visit the Pet Collective shop at petcollective.shop, petcollective.shop, to get cool stuff for you and your furry friends. That's a wrap on season one, everybody. Hopefully we'll be back soon. Allison, yes. Thanks for everything. You're the best.
Thank Bye, you. Everyone. We'll see you guys next time around.
The Pet Collective podcast is produced by Jukin Media and The Pet Collective. Head producer, Anosh McAdam. Associate producer, Brandon Kendall. And our original score is composed by Corey Celeste.